It's Perek Yud Aleph that we are in the middle of. I know we've had a 2-week break, so it's been a little while. I have to actually, I'm sorry, let me just make sure everybody's muted before we start. Sorry. First, okay. Can you hear me? Yeah, okay, good. Okay. So we started Perek Yud Aleph chapter 11 3 weeks ago already, because it was Shavuos and then the public holiday, and we did quite a bit. We did to understand what was going on, and as we saw in this perek, we have a bit of a, how do you say it, a bit of a, the direction of the Chumash is taking a new direction, which will actually, one will flow to the next, which is not such a positive one, because what we're going to see, and as the chapter begins with the first three words, Vayihi ha'am kimis oininim, that the nation were complainers. They were provoking Hashem. They were complaining. They weren't very happy. I know there's two booklets in front of you. We're going to look, because we didn't finish the first one, and then we're going to go to the second one. But in this chapter, as we said last time, it's a little bit confusing to understand the order, the flow of the chapter. It's just it's this parsha that we just read yesterday, 2 days ago in Shul, Parshas Ba'aleischa. So it's a very full parsha. And as we saw was that the Jewish people, first there was these complainers, and it doesn't say what they were complaining about. As we mentioned, they were complaining about, most of the opinions are about the journey, about how difficult it was. And most opinions say it was only the Erev Rav, those extra people who came from Egypt. They complained about the journey, and Hashem brought this fire down. Amongst the people who perished with the fire, with that fire that came down, were also the Zakenim. Remember we mentioned those elders. Those elders were the ones who initially in Egypt were chosen, and unfortunately already in Egypt they displayed a little bit of a lack of leadership, because we said when Moshe went to Paroi and he wanted this Canaan to accompany him, as he was coming closer to the palace, the Medrash tells us they got scared. And that's why when you look at the story, the only ones who meet with Paroi is Moshe and Aaron. The Canaan are nowhere to be seen. They meant well, but they weren't obviously up to the leadership. And then we said the biggest mistake they made was at Har Sinai, when it was time, when they had this incredible revelation of godliness, they acted a little bit, I don't know if the word is frivolous, but not with enough respect. They managed to eat, to drink. It wasn't enough of a feeling of awe in the presence of the revelation of godliness, and therefore they actually deserve, because of their great level, they deserve to die. But Hashem didn't want to have them die at Har Sinai. He didn't want to ruin that whole experience. So they died here when these people were already complaining, and there was already a fire coming down from heaven, so there was already a punishment, so they were also consumed. That's who died initially. Then the perek, which is what's confusing, goes on to another complaint, and that's the complaint about the mon. So it's not clear that there was a first complaint and a second, but that's what most mefarshim say, and they start to complain about the mon. Amongst the complaining about the mon, also is difficult to understand, so they complain about the mon, as we said, and we went into this at length, that it's too spiritual, it doesn't make them feel full, and in that complaint also came along a few other complaints. And not everybody was equal in the complaining, and not everybody was complaining about the same things. So some people were complaining about the mun, just generally. Some people wanted meat. Remember, that was the big thing. We want meat, because the mun wasn't meat. Even if it could taste like meat, it still didn't give them that feeling of, you know, pleasure of meat, whatever it was. And then some, it says, and we remember the fish that we ate in Egypt. What's the fish? So we're not sure. Do they want fish? Do they want meat? Because remember, in a desert, you can't get fish. So perhaps they want fish. And in Egypt, they got fish for free, as they said. Whatever that could symbolize, many things. As we said, free from mitzvahs, free from many things. Then we said also, there was one more. So I just lost my train of thought, because there was one more thing they might have been complaining about. Besides the meat and the fish, there was one more. Oh, exactly, what the mon didn't taste like, that's right. And if that was really a chesed, a kindness for them, but nevertheless they come. So it was really, that more goes into the whole thing of the mon, how the mon is not good enough, and it's even missing some important tastes, and that's it. And then what we found, I'm just going over, because to see the order, the structure, what we find then is that Moshe Rabbeinu gets quite overwhelmed, it seems, and he complains. And we're going to read those psukim. They're very sharp, the way Moshe Rabbeinu complains about the Jewish people, which is actually unique in a sense, because up until now, we found that when the Jewish people made a mistake, Moshe was always like their lawyer. You know, he always, so to speak, defended them. And here, you almost see that he's sort of giving up a little bit. And that's when we have this concept, we read a pasuk that he uses the feminine, like as he refers to himself in the feminine usage, which symbolizes that he felt very, very weak and extremely overwhelmed by the burden of leading this nation. So Hashem said to him, if you feel overwhelmed, choose new leaders. That's where that comes into the chapter, because it's somehow, it comes in between them complaining about wanting meat, and then we get to the quails after, where Hashem is supplying them with the meat. So in the middle, we have a concept where Hashem says, choose 70 new leaders, and that's what we're going to see today, and he chooses 70 leaders, and then some other story happens there, because it was, as we said, 70, if you divide it by 12, if you want to have equal representation, is a bit of a problem. So, because you can, if you have six from each tribe, you'll have two extra. That makes 72. So what are you going to do? Which tribes, which are the two tribes that are only going to have five representatives? How do you choose? So Moshe made a geirel. And on the geirel, what he did was he wrote, on 70 of the papers, he wrote Zakein, and on two were blank. So he did choose six from each tribe initially, and what he hoped was six would come. Everybody would choose a piece of paper. If it said that you are a Zakein, well, that means you're worthy. And if yours comes out blank, that means you have to go back home. You're not chosen to be an elected leader, and therefore it wouldn't be that Moshe favored one tribe over another. It would be 70 that are chosen, obviously, with the hands of Hashem. Ended up that two of the people that were nominated didn't show up because they were either they were humble, they didn't want to embarrass everybody else. Ended up that they were the greatest of all. So even though they didn't show up, they got prophecy on their own, and we'll see Eldad and Medad, and two others picked up a blank, obviously, and they had to go home. But then we come back to the story, and we're going to go more in depth about that today. Then Hashem says, you asked for meat? Oh boy, am I going to give you. And that's when we have the story of the quail. And there is where Hashem brings this slav in Hebrew, whatever it represents. And the slav, it said, had a taste of both fish and meat, you know, making everybody happy. But as we know, it was actually deadly. So in many ways, first of all, when it fell, it killed many people, just when it fell. When they ate it, depending on who you were, we'll see in the Rashi today, some people died instantly, some people died after 30 days. They stuffed themselves. They literally, like, it, there was so much of it, and they were so gluttonous. And at the end, quite a few people died at the end of this story. So this was a very sad story, but it shows, again, their complaints, and that's why we have to discuss why they're complaining so much, because that's what it seems. One complaint after another complaint after another complaint. Anyways, and the Jewish people are complaining, and Moshe is trying to satisfy and make them happy. Okay, one more small thing before we go inside. After this story, which is we definitely won't get to today for sure, we'll see how much of this we get to, but it comes the end of the parsha that we read just 2 days ago, so we have the whole story of Miriam and Aaron speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe. So you see that you have one story now after the next of, it's not just negative, but it's interesting, the underlying theme seems to be, good morning, that they're expressing in a certain way, verbally, something negative, which is interesting. Some music. It's all good. So verbally they're expressing dissatisfaction, and that leads even into this week's parsha. This week's parsha is Parsha Shlach, which is the parsha that comes right after Baalei Yisra, where the Jewish people again complaining about going into the land of Israel. So you see that there's something very interesting that's happening here, that they can't seem to find a certain satisfaction and a certain acceptance. They are complaining, and there's a big question, how deep the complaints are, is it really what they are, is it just verbal, and so to speak, inside they are, you know, there's all this kind of thing, but let's see a little bit more about all that we're discussing, and a lot of it is a lot of questions. One of the big questions that I'll just tell you that comes up from what we are reading in the story of how he supplied them with all this meat, and then they died, is that so bad? Like, what did they do that was so terrible that they deserved, it seems, such harsh punishments. This is something that we have to understand. What are they doing? What are the Jewish people doing? And what is the response of Moshe? And what is the response of Hashem? And how does it fit all of it together? So we're going to start with one thought, and we're going to get into more details of the story, and we'll come to another. So what I'd like to read is just one. Okay, I'm going to share the screen in a minute. You don't have that on your screen, but if you look at on your first booklet that you have in front of you, go to page number 3 for a minute. So I just want to show you one. This just underlines the theme. Page we read this last time. I just want to show you the Rashi again on page 3. It says that the nation was kim misaynanim. So what does the word kim misaynanim mean? Ein misaynanim ela loshen alila. When you talk about misaynanim, it means it's a pretext. It's complaining, and you're looking for an excuse to complain, right? It's like you're not sure what you're really, I mean, you might be sure. You're not happy, but it's not what you're complaining about that's the issue. It's that you want to complain. That's what he says. Mevakshim alila he'eich lifreish me'achare ha'makayim. So what was the real thing that was bothering them? What was it that they were really expressing? It wasn't all these things about the mon and not having enough meat and how the journey is so difficult and why they're not stopping. It was that they didn't want to be so close to God. That's what it says. They felt too overwhelmed, too much spirituality, perhaps as you said, Rabbi Blackman said, you know, too much, you know, running away from school, too many commands from Hashem. Who says that our life has to be so bound up and so ruled and so regulated by all the 613 mitzvahs that our whole life focus should be on coming close to Hashem? That's the underlying. And because of that underlying dissatisfaction, they're finding things to complain about. So that's how Rashi puts it. It's just a good way to understand. This is like the theme that will come through all of it. Okay, what I'd like you to do, because we've done the other pages, go to page number 5 in your first booklet. I'm going to share the screen now. What we have here is not directly from the Chumash. This is, I know we've done it quite a few times. I couldn't leave it. This is from a sefer called the Nesivas Shalom. Beautiful, beautiful. We've done him many times, and he gives us quite a good insight to understand what's really happening here. So, on the page number 5, there is a little bracket there, do you see, on the first column? And I'll translate, and please ask if it's not clear. I beg you, don't just yet. I don't know, over there you can, if I can see you, you can raise your hand, but otherwise, I don't know. Okay, ulechol ha'pirishim. So you see where it says on page number 5. So he asks the question, according to all the explanations that we've given about the fact that they were punished and they die and because they, I don't know. He quotes one explanation that the Ramban said. Ramban said, you know, that they were very, very devastated. Why were not devastated? They were very dissatisfied. Why were they dissatisfied? Because when they left Har Sinai, as we see now, they were supposed to go into the land of Israel, and they felt, even though we explained that Hashem made their journey as comfortable as possible, they still felt dissatisfied that the journey was too difficult. As we said, sometimes Hashem didn't give them much warning. Remember we mentioned this when we learned this part? No itinerary. As we know with traveling, we want to know when we're leaving, what time, exactly how we're going to go, for how long we're going to go, and they weren't told any of it. So to them, that was very, very challenging. So they were complaining about that. That's what it says. So, and the Ramban says that they should have, what was expected of them, was to accept Hashem's will with joy, especially after all they've experienced, all the miracles in Egypt, how Hashem took care of them, took them out of Egypt, gave them the Torah, they had the revelation. So there was much more expected of them in the way that they should have accepted, even though it was challenging, they should have accepted the challenges with a feeling of joy and love. So therefore, according to the Ramban, they deserved, so to speak, whatever unfolded. I don't know if the word is deserved, but it led to them being treated in this type of a harsh way, if you want to say. But the Nesiv HaShalom still asks. He says, all fine and good to say they had all the revelations and all the kindnesses and they're complaining, but was it so bad what they're doing? What was so bad? What is it? What's wrong here? He feels that we're still missing something key in the story to understand why Hashem is dissatisfied. So that's what he says. So he says, "Ma," as you see the underlined line, "Ma haya goydel ha'chet," what was the great sin, the ha'inesh ha'chomer, and the severity, such a severe punishment. until the point of Ativrabam, as we said initially, that the fire came, and afterwards we find that they died when they ate so much of the meat. What was it so bad? So let's go to the next paragraph. Oh, and he says something cute. He says, you know, they're complaining, they want meat, but they only wanted kosher meat. What's wrong with complaining about that? They didn't want other meat. So what's the problem? Right, you would think that would be amazing. So what's the problem? So that's what he asks. So let's see as he goes on the bottom paragraph there on the first column. So he's basing it on different holy books, and he says, Shekol Taryag Mitzvis Heim Hachana Le Mitzvis Via Haftas Shemalikecha Uludov Kabai. All the 613 mitzvahs, right? We have many commandments, and we think that, you know, and the truth is that each one is as important as the other. We don't know which one, we don't value one over the other. But he says the truth is that they all have really one underlying theme. What are they supposed to accomplish, all the mitzvahs that we do? The concept of bringing us closer to loving Hashem and to coming close to God. Shetachlis kol ha-mitzvahs, the purpose of all the mitzvahs, that a Jew should cleave and come close to God. And all the 613 mitzvahs, they are all different ways how we can come close to God. Versus someone who comes, we don't know how. So the mitzvahs give us that ability to come close, each one in its own way. And he brings other holy books of Avodas Yisrael, maybe B'Shem HaRav HaKadosh HaMagid Mimezrich, so the Mizrich or Magid explains. And this is actually a very, very, very beautiful idea. You know, we have a very famous story of Hillel. Do you remember that the convert, that, well, he wasn't a convert yet, but he wanted to convert, and he came to Shammai and he said, teach me the whole Torah on one foot. And Shammai kicks him out. What does Hillel say? We know the famous line. What is hateful to you, don't do unto others, right? Now, we're going to take that very out of context. As you know, lots of Hasidic teachings take things out of context. So this is going to be explained in a little bit of a different way. He says, what did Hillel actually say to that ger? I want to show you something very interesting. He says, so the words that Hillel used was, da'alach sami, what is hateful to you, l'chavercha loy sa'avit, don't do it to your friend. Right, he says. This is the entire Torah Zayikola Torah Kula. The Idach Pirsha, and the rest is an explanation. Huzil Gomor, and that's what it explains in the Gemara. Uperish Shabakashas Hakir Haisa Lilmud. So he says, what was the person actually coming to Hillel? Was it just a joke, a prank? No, this was a serious person who wanted to understand something really deep. And what was his question? He had a very deep question. He came to Hillel and he was asking him, tell me one rule. What will encapsulate? What's like the key that's going to help me to what? Sha'al piv yoda lehisnaheg b'chol davar shebol yoday. How I should behave in everything that comes to me. In other words, which is the best way? What is the way that a person should be behaving, acting, living in this world in order to be doing Hashem's will? What is it? What's the key? He says like this, ma la'sais u ma lay la'sais, what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be doing. And he wants it on one foot. The Amar Lai, Hillel manages. What does Hillel say? Shaklal, what is the whole rule of the whole Torah? Mai de'olach sani l'chavercha. So now he takes out of context. The word l'chavercha usually means to your fellow man, to your friend. He says, don't translate it like a friend. Look at the word l'chavercha, also in Hebrew, chibur. What is the word chibur? To connect. Okay, connect. So he says, whatever will be hateful, whatever will block your connection to God, stay away from it. What do you have to ask yourself? I'll show you how he says it beautifully. Hainu, kol shesanoi. Whatever will be hateful will stop your coming close and connecting and cleaving to Hashem. That's what you have to stay away from. So he says, what do you have to think? Every action, before you do anything, before you think, say, do anything, you have to think only one thing, he says. Ha'im ze mekarevay say l'Hashem yisparech? Is this going to bring me closer to God? Achas v'shalom marchik I say. Or is it going to make me further from God? And whatever is hateful, whatever is going to make you further from God, stay away from it. If you can stop and ask that question. Now we know what that means. God, as we always say, the Baal Shem Tov explained beautifully that when you talk about Avas Yisrael, loving a fellow Jew or loving a fellow person, if you have a good, somebody who you love, and if somebody does something negative to them, right, that's hurting that hurting you. So in other words, what this incorporates is everything. It incorporates our relationship with God and our relationship with another. Because if we're going to do something which is going to hurt another person, well, that God's not going to be happy with that either. That's also causing a distance between us and God. So if we can ask ourselves, before we do anything, is this going to bring us closer or further? Well, then every single thing in life will be motivated by the right motivation. Well, then we'll constantly be growing. We're constantly going to be coming closer to God, growing as better people and doing the right thing. That's what Hillel said. And here, what does it have to do with our story? So let's see what he says. He says like this, that everything in life, he says, is measured by how much distance you're putting between yourself and God. Does it matter what it looks like externally? So a very interesting thing. If Hashem says, well, Hashem doesn't say, but if Hashem would say that I don't like if somebody drinks cold water, then cold water seems to be nothing wrong with it. But if Hashem said that, then that becomes quite a harsh thing. And if Hashem says, I really don't like if you put an ice cube in the water and you put an ice cube in the water, that's even worse. So it's measured by how much distance you're putting between yourself and Hashem. And he says, the motivation of the Jewish people here, as you said, right away, running away from Har Sinai, and initially that almost, it was like an overwhelming fear, perhaps, that their life is going to become too spiritual, too godly, which whatever that's supposed to mean, and what was motivating them was perhaps that they wanted a little bit of a distance between themselves, and they shouldn't necessarily be so close to godliness. That's why it was so harsh, because that was the motivation. It wasn't what they were doing. It wasn't the meat. It wasn't the mun. It wasn't anything that specific that they were complaining about. It was what was motivating them in their complaint. And underlying all of this is this. So this is a very powerful idea, which gives us a little bit of a perspective to understand. But we have to, when we think about it, we think, why? Why wouldn't they want? I mean, they've just experienced such incredible revelation, such a miracle, such kindness from Hashem. So what is it about them? So there's many ways to explain it. Perhaps they were afraid. It's overwhelming, as we say. As we said, many of them had lived for many, many years in Egypt. And when we reflect, and we know, we learned about Egypt, Egypt was, what do we say, similar to what we're living in now. Egypt was considered the most impure place in the world. It was a place of pleasure and gluttony, and there was no higher purpose to life. There was definitely no godliness there. There was no sense of accountability, nothing, right? So in a sense, when you've lived a life with that type of a mindset and that type of perspective, it's extremely difficult to go from one to the other so quickly. And that's what happened to the Jewish people here. Now all of a sudden, there's a revelation of godliness at Har Sinai. He says, I am the God. You should know that everything you do and in everything you experience, you should be able to see godliness. That's not so simple for them. And they find it quite challenging. So you can see what's happening here. And yet, Moshe Rabbeinu gets very upset, as we saw, and we're going to see in the verses, because to him, he finds it a little bit more challenging to relate to that. And we could understand. Moshe, as we say, is half man, half angel. He went up on Har Sinai. He lived so many days with no food, no drink. We said the man that they ate came in the merit of who? Of Moshe. Because the man is a spiritual food. Moshe appreciates spiritual food. And in a sense, Moshe even expresses to Hashem, part of his thing is, he says, maybe I'm not even the right leader for them. Because maybe they need a leader who understands them more. Remember, we mentioned this last time. That's why maybe Hashem said, yeah, choose the 70 Canaan. Because maybe another leader will be able to supply them with meat. Because they understand the need for meat. I don't understand it. I don't need meat. none is perfect for me. It's actually better for me because it makes me more refined. As we said, it refines the intellect. When you're not so heavy with food, your intellect is more refined. You're able to think clearer. And to Moshe, that was the whole goal. So he said, maybe I'm Takanai. So he said, this was a very interesting thing that was happening. And yet Hashem does feel that the Jewish people are capable of living this high life, as we say, this great life. And that's why he wants it for them. He wants the best for them. And all of this helps elevate them and give them this message and internalize this, that you can live a higher life. And that's what we'll see through the Pesukim. That's what it goes through. I want to go through one more concept that he brings. Go to page number 6. I'll show you something beautiful here. Sure, something.
I accept, you know, that in Egypt there was all this food and everything, but that was slaves.
I know. Did they forget so quickly? Okay, so that's a very good question, Sylvia. It's an excellent question. So, you know, last time we saw something very interesting that they said, we remember the fish. I'm so sorry. You know, I feel so bad if I have another one. Yeah, do you mind?
But you have to cross the door.
I know we don't. Okay. Actually, we do in the little room, that's the truth. But this is not from... so it's on page number 5. You sure? Rona, you sure?
Yeah,
100%. You know, in the little room, there is a Mikrais Gedolos Bamidbar, and we're almost coming to that.
Okay,
so that would be the best. Yeah, so just one more page here. Okay, so I just wanted to tell you like this. So Sylvia asked a very good question. Remember, because I said, oh, we remember the fish that we ate in Egypt. What fish did they? As the Mefarshim say, they were barely given straw. They were given free fish. Who are they fooling? So we mentioned it. We said an interesting thing. Perhaps two things. Perhaps even if they mean physical fish, what they meant is that there were these small salted fish that were like preserved, like not very, very cheap and inexpensive, that since there was the Nile there, right? That's how Egypt had the Nile that was always around. There was so much fish around that the Egyptians did allow the Jewish people to take free fish because that was like the cheapest, most inexpensive food that was available. So it could be that they did have free fish. It wasn't very good quality. It wasn't like a piece of salmon. And really, as we see, that's why it's like an excuse almost that they're complaining about. But according to other commentaries, the word fish is just a word that they're using. And the word fish... Yes, sardines, exactly, like sardines. It means, Dago, we said, means that they were... What they're complaining about is that in Egypt, they lived a life which was free from any rules and regulations, specifically when it comes to immorality or relationships. And the word daga, because you know we know the concept of ayidgu laroiv, that you multiply. So in Egypt we can marry anybody we wanted, we can live with anybody we wanted, and they're like yearning for the life which was free from any rules. That's what maybe also what they were complaining about. So it's all, lots of different things that it symbolizes. Okay, but the truth is the meat, they didn't have in Egypt meat, but what they were complaining here is interesting because they were given mun every single day, and what they felt was that the mun was like a miraculous food which fell, and they felt almost like here we are being given this most miraculous food, and therefore we are expected to be so grateful, but you know, the food doesn't have any real substance. So they felt almost like they were being cheated from what they could have and should have perhaps been getting if they're called this chosen nation that Hashem is taking care of and taking them through the desert into the land of Israel. So that's part of also the rationale of what they're complaining about. Not that they actually had meat in Egypt. So, but fish they for sure couldn't get in the desert. There's no ocean there, so there was no fish available. Okay, so let's see what happens. I want to see one more nice point before we go into the Pesukim. It's on page number, what page number is this? See, it's page number 6. Do you see that base? I want to show you something interesting. Sorry, that's the only thing that you don't have at you, and then the next thing will be inside. He says, the Nesiv HaShalom says something nice. He says, what does this mean? What was so negative, what was so harsh about what they were doing, these complainers? And he explains it really beautifully. He says like this, that when a Jew accepts, receives, willingly, how Hashem acts to him. So in other words, we wake up in the morning, and whatever our life is, it is, right? So whatever we're expected to face. And if a Jew looks towards the day with joy and with acceptance and with a sense of purpose and recognizing that this is what Hashem is giving him, and he feels grateful, right? We say Maida'ani properly. He says, what happens is, Ve'ech Shakadosh Baruch Hu misnaig imay, how Hashem is acting towards him. He mekabels Zayst Ava, he accepts this with love. Then, this is not a punishment, this is not a reward, a direct, automatic consequence is, when a person is in that mode, Azay Mida, Keneged Mida, measure for measure, Gam HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekabel beratzayim es hanhagasay. Hashem also accepts your behavior willingly. If you accept what God does to you with love, then Hashem will accept what you do with love. What does that mean? Even if you only do a little bit, even if it's not so perfect, even if Hashem doesn't understand where you're coming from, like we don't understand where Hashem is coming from. But once we start to complain and nitpick and have high expectations and say, well, I should have had this, or it shouldn't be raining today, or there shouldn't be traffic, or the parking spot should have been there. I'm saying the stupid things. I mean, obviously in life there's a lot greater challenges that we face. But when a person feels constantly, begrudgingly, that everything that he's getting he doesn't deserve, and that if I was God I would do it differently, well then Hashem says, okay, no problem, I'm going to start looking at how you're behaving, and I'll nitpick as well. I'm not so happy with what you're doing, I'm not so happy with the way you're acting. And that's the automatic, it's like a mirror, automatic reaction. So what happened over here was, they started to complain, the mun is like this, the mun is like that, doesn't have the taste of the cucumber, doesn't have the taste of the watermelon, whatever it was, all these small things. Hashem says, you're starting to nitpick? Well, I'll also nitpick. Well, then everything you do has to be perfect. And that's the automatic reaction. It's a very interesting thing, because in life it does work in a general way. We say it many times in a very beautiful way, that when a person lives life, and with the attitude, you know, we talk about trying to do more than what they're really capable sometimes. We try, not necessarily capable, but more than what we're comfortable with. Like you go out of your way to help somebody even though you weren't comfortable, whatever it may be. Then the mirror reaction from Hashem is that he behaves to us in a miraculous way. That's the miraculous way we live. So if we put ourselves in the miraculous, miraculous means the not natural, which means going beyond what is our nature, then perhaps, not always, there's never always, as we know, but what we are doing is we are enabling a reaction of a miraculous. So we can also get what we don't deserve. We can also get lots of good things. I mean, we should all get good things all the time. It shouldn't be dependent on what we're doing. But this is one way that if we live our life in that way, that's the reaction. So that's what the Nesiv Shalom says here. When the Jewish people put themselves in that mode where they were really complaining and they were nitpicking and they were looking for every single negative thing that wasn't coming their way 100%, automatically Hashem started to look at them in a very exacting, measured way. And that's why even things that seem not so massive got ended up with results that weren't very good. That you would imagine Hashem might be compassionate and overlook, but he wasn't going to overlook because we weren't overlooking anything. So that's what happens here. That's how he explains also all of these stories. I think there's one more beautiful thing I wanted to share before. Again, sorry, so I said one more and now it's one more again. But, Okay, so this is just again to put in context with the mun, what they were complaining about. We talk about meat. So it says like this, what did they really want? What's the problem with the mun? Just eat the mun and be happy. You get food, you don't have to even cook it practically. I mean, who wouldn't be happy not to have to go to Kohl's, not to have to shop, not to have to worry it stays fresh? We would all be happy. What were they so upset about? So it says the truth is the motivation wasn't the food itself. It was the concept of meat really represented a bigger concept. It was the concept of what we call in Hebrew taiva, desire, indulgence. They wanted to be able to indulge. They wanted to have pleasure, which is, the truth is we all want pleasure, and that's not a negative thing. A human being is created with a need for pleasure, and there are many pleasures that are good things, but they wanted pleasure for the sake of pleasure. And it wasn't necessarily going to be leading to anything positive, not giving them, putting them in a good mood to serve Hashem or whatever it may be, or help somebody. It was just for the sake of indulging. and this is what Hashem saw. So, and Hashem says like this, that when a person makes a mistake, so it's interesting, when we make a mistake, let's say we do something wrong, which we all do, because whatever we were tired, we weren't able to motivate ourselves, whatever it may be, because we're people, that's fine. But when a person makes it a value, and they search for something to do that's negative, for the sake of doing something negative, that's a problem. So here, what they were asking for was, they were asking for an indulgence. It wasn't like they happened to pass by the bakery and it smelled so good they couldn't resist it. They were asking Hashem to put the bakery into their house so that they should have this temptation constantly and they should be able to indulge. So to ask for the temptation to be there constantly so that you should be able to indulge in it, that's already much more problematic. And that's what he says, that was what they wanted. And the problem with that also is that that person will never fix what he's doing. Because if a person succumbs, right? You ate what you shouldn't have eaten, you knew you weren't supposed to eat that and you ate it, well then you'll feel guilty a little bit afterwards. So hopefully you'll change. But when it's not a matter of succumbing to just a desire of the moment, but it becomes something that's a value for you, well, you're not doing any tshuva there, right? You're never feeling guilty. You're feeling proud. This is my life's value. This is what I'm living for. Well, that's a big problem. And that's what Hashem knows. That person will never change. And if they're never going to change, then they shift to a whole different mindset of how they're treated. So that's also how the Nesivah starts. So just to put in context, because it's actually, as we're going to see, it's quite difficult to understand just based on the simple verses, what was it that was so terrible that they did? And just one more thing that the Nesivah Shalom says, and the truth is because the time in the desert specifically actually was, it wasn't just even ordinary times. Now it wouldn't even be so bad. But that time was actually designated by Hashem. Those years, I mean, it was supposed to be a short time, but even that short time was a time where Hashem was trying to elevate the Jewish people to a whole different mindset, to prepare them to live in the land of Israel as a holy nation. So here we are in a process. It's like somebody's, it's almost like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you know? When you come to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, everybody's in a different mindset. You want to do the right thing, just because it's that time of the year. Here we are in a state where Hashem actually makes, and Hashem literally puts everything in place. The clouds are surrounding them. They have man falling, so they have spiritual food. So everything is done in a way where they are really being prepared and elevated to live a holy life. And that's why if in that circumstance, there, you outright go against what Hashem wants, that's much harsher. That's much more complicated, much more difficult. And that's the problem. And not only is it more difficult, but Hashem is also concerned about the effect of one person on another. Because this is the time that Hashem gives us to elevate all of us. And as we've mentioned, the time in the desert isn't just for to prepare this generation to go into the land of Israel. It actually gives us the strength for whatever we're doing now, right? Especially the time in the desert, because that's what it's like now. The desert, a place where it's snakes and scorpions, where Hashem is not revealed. And that's what we live in. We live in a desert, a world where godliness is not revealed. Where do we get the strength to live in a higher way, from the Jews in the desert? So it had to be careful, so to speak, how they were behaving and how they were reacting to each of the circumstances. Okay, now, I don't have numbers, but if you go, I think, to the new booklet of what you have, and I want to show you something beautiful here. We're going to see now, some of the psukim. Today we're just going to get to, I think we're going to be left with quite a few questions, which I don't mind if you ask, and I know that it's not going to be time to get to all the answers. But what we're going to do is, if you look, I'll tell you about it. It's Perek Yud Aleph, and it's Pasuk, we're going to start from Pasuk Yud in Perek Yud Aleph. Okay? So we'll see now, just to see a few very nice things. So we've read some of these verses. So it's page 122. The first page of the next booklet there, page 122. I just want to read through a few of these Pasukim. I think we might have read. I actually don't think we read them last time. So what happened was the man came, the man fell. Now, so the people were complaining, and now we come to another complaint in Pasuk Yud. It says, Vayishma Moshe, and Moshe heard, Es Ha'am, the nation, Boiche. They were crying. Sorry. Okay. Boiche l'mishpachosav. What were they crying? So literally we translated, they were crying They were sitting families. You can imagine them in the desert, in the tents. Each family was crying together. Ish le Pesach Ahalai, each man by the entrance to his tent. Vayichar af Hashem ba'oid. And the wrath, this is that, that's what I'm saying. That's why I needed to do all that before to see. That sounds like, what's the big deal? So they're crying. And Hashem is so angry. Be'ene Moshe, and it says Hashem's anger flared greatly. Ube'ene Moshe ra, and in the eyes of Moshe, it was bad. So here they are, sitting outside their tents, crying. What were they crying about? So it could be they were crying about the mon, right? Because it continues just before that, talking about the mon. Or they were crying, as we said, because of the fact that they wanted meat. Or they were crying because of all the extra mitzvahs that they had to keep, whatever it may be. But they were crying. And I just want to show you something very nice in the Rashi, on Rashi Yud. So I'll show you something nice. Rashi says like this. What does it mean, Baichel Mishpachaysav? So he says, Mishpachais, Mishpachais Ne'asafim. All the individual families would gather together, Ubaichin, and weep. Why? Why are they weeping? Lefarsein tarumasan, to publicize their complaint, begoloi, in the open. Interesting. What is crying? Crying is when you express in the strongest way possible that you are not comfortable, that you're not happy, that you're in pain, that something is wrong. So it's very interesting the way it sounds. It sounds like they like came together to cry. That's what it almost sounds like. And it's interesting that I want to just read you one more pasuk before I want to share something interesting. It says, and okay, so the rabbi said, the word mishpachaysav could mean over matters of families, as we say, al arayis had nesareslam, over arayis, which had been forbidden, which means different people that now they were not permitted to marry. Okay, I want to say something. Let me show you something interesting. What happens in the next pasuk? Oh, it doesn't say it in the next pasuk. Okay. So the question is like this, that the commentaries ask an interesting question. When you have a complaint, usually, a normal human being, they're not happy with something. What happens? Usually, you talk about it, right? And like imagine even a child coming over to you because it's bedtime and they say it's not bedtime. So usually they'll come over, they'll say, I really want to stay up. First, words come out of their mouth. And then the words lead to crying afterwards, right? First, you verbalize. And then as you get more emotional, then you cry. Here, it sounds like they went straight to crying. Straight to crying. Automatic crying. When does somebody cry immediately? What would cause somebody to cry about something that they want immediately? Only if they think that the other person can't give them what they want. When you're so upset, right, and you're so devastated, and you think it's like almost impossible, so you get so emotional right away. If you feel you can negotiate, well, you'll negotiate first. But if you feel there's no negotiation, if you feel the other person either can't help you, right, it's not changeable, the situation, or they don't want to help you, well, then you might cry immediately. That's the only time you would cry immediately. Otherwise, for sure, you would try to talk. But immediately you start to cry because crying is almost a sense of, what's the word, like where you give up. That's when you cry. You know, you're like, it's just so much, and you just cry. So the Mefarshim explains something. That's part of also what leads on here. The Jewish people were upset about the mon, and they wanted meat. When they started to cry here, what was it that upset Moshe? He said it means that they actually believe that Hashem is not capable of giving them what they're asking for. In other words, to them, Hashem is limited. Hashem is limited. And they want something and Hashem can't give it to them. This to Moshe was very hurtful. After all they've experienced, Hashem taking them out of Egypt, 10 plagues, seeing the miracles that Hashem is capable of, and yet they feel Hashem can't give them this little bit of meat that they're asking for, and they're already crying immediately, Moshe Rabbeinu is absolutely devastated. That's what the commentaries say. He feels this is beyond. How could it be? Where is their little bit of faith? A little bit of understanding of how great God is. And that's why, what does he react? Look what Moshe Rabbeinu says in the next pasuk, in pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Moshe el Hashem. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to God, Lama hare oisa la'avdecha, why have you done evil to your servant? Losum es masa kol ha'am hazeh alai, to put the burden of this entire people upon me. He feels these people, they are too much after everything, all that they've experienced, and they still don't have that little bit of faith that Hashem could supply them with the meat that they want, or if they want it genuinely, if it's a genuine request, it's too much. He can't. You see how Moshe Rabbeinu is expressing such a deep pain. So then Moshe Rabbeinu says, and this is actually very interesting language that he uses, very, very, how do you say it? It's very, the imagery is very graphic. He says, "Ha'anoichi harisi es ha'kol ha'am hazeh. Have I conceived this entire people? Im anoichi yiladatihu. Did I give birth to it? Ki soymar elai, that you say to me, sa'eyu b'cheikecha, carried in your bosom, kasher yisa ha'aymen es ha'yenek, as a nurse carries a suckling ala adama, asher nishbata ala ha'loisav, to the land that you swore to its forefathers." Such language. The truth is, Moshe was a devoted shepherd, we always say, and he did supply the Jewish people with whatever they need. But you see what he feels? They're asking for meat. And he uses this interesting language. He says, am I like the oimein es hayonik, as we say, the nurse carrying a suckling? In other words, do I have meat to give them, right? How am I going to supply it? Like a mother who gives her child the food that she's asking for. So in a certain way, you can see, as we said, perhaps Moshe feels a little bit inadequate. Maybe I'm not the right leader. I don't understand their physical desires that they want and their materialistic needs. Maybe I just can't seem to satisfy them. So what happens? And then he goes on, and this is a very difficult pasuk to understand. But Moshe says, "Me'ayin li basar laseis l'chol ha'am hazeh? Where shall I get meat to give to this entire nation? Ki yipchu alai, that they cry to me, lemar, saying, t'no lanu basar, give us meat, v'noichela, that we may eat. Lo'uchal aneichi levadi laseis l'chol ha'am hazeh. I can't carry them by myself. Ki kaved mimeni, they are too heavy for me." What is Moshe Rabbeinu saying? Where am I going to get meat for them? So who's not trusting God now? This is interesting. The people come to Moshe as a leader. Why? Because what do they know about Moshe? He has a direct line with God, right? That's how they look at it. So they don't expect Moshe to give them the meat. They obviously expect Moshe to ask God. Does Moshe doubt that God has enough meat for the people? What's Moshe saying? Where do I have enough meat? And the truth is, when he says, where do I have enough meat, he doesn't mean me. He means God. It's a euphemism, because he doesn't. It's disrespectful for the Chumash to write it that way, so it actually plays it down a bit. Where are you going to have enough meat to satisfy them? Hashem doesn't have enough meat. What's Moshe saying? Oh, it's a very big question also. That's a very, very good question. Maybe the commentaries ask, what were they even complaining about? They came out of Egypt with tons of cattle. Why don't they just eat their cattle? So according to some opinions, they couldn't. They weren't allowed in the desert unless they would bring it as a korban. You know, we have the concept of shechita, of taking an animal and shechita, and then it becomes kosher. There is a possibility that in those in the desert, while they were traveling, they could only eat meat if they designated it as holy. So they would give part of it as a korban, as a sacrifice, and then they were able to eat the rest of it. So perhaps they didn't want to do that. They felt that was too much of a too much difficulty, too much taxing, too many rules and regulations. According to some opinions, they were concerned that if they start eating the meat, it won't last. Who knows how long they're going to be in the desert? Remember, we said they weren't given an itinerary. It's like when you take a trip and you take provisions, and if you don't know how long the trip is going to be for, you are concerned. You don't know, can I eat everything now? Can I eat all my sandwiches? What happens tomorrow? I'll be hungry. So, but according to something, it's not a good enough answer, because they had so much cattle.
And cattle produce babies.
But so it is a question. So that's what they say. So perhaps they didn't want, they wanted to make sure they had it when they go into the land, or they expected from God. That's what's very difficult to understand. Yeah, it is. That's why some commentaries say, you see, this was all a pretext. The complaint wasn't really the meat. It was more a pretext about this inner dissatisfaction. And sometimes in life, this is interesting, you know, we do it ourselves. Sometimes we don't even realize when we're complaining that we're not complaining about that thing. When we just have a dissatisfaction, we just feel a need to find something to hope, and we don't want to deal with the real inner difficulty, the challenge that we're really, really dissatisfied with, because that's not changeable. So we don't know what it was. It could be even that. There could be plenty of cattle, but they'll complain they don't have meat because something is eating at them inside. And that's perhaps what was going on. As we said, this is the problem. They didn't want to come so close to God. Right, as we say, they needed a little bit of a barrier here. Okay, I want to understand what my... But I can't... time went too fast. Oh, I'm so sorry, because I'll just tell you something very quickly, but next week we'll deal with it a little. I just don't want to leave this question with Moshe. Moshe doesn't trust God. Of course, Moshe. So there's a very beautiful thing. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu felt so afraid, actually, for the Jewish people here, because he saw their complaint, and he knew, as you said, we saw in the Pasuk, first Hashem is angry, and then it's bad for Moshe. What's bad for Moshe? The anger of Hashem. He didn't want Hashem's wrath on the Jews. He loved the Jewish people. And he felt so hurt and so upset and so devastated, perhaps, that he wasn't inspiring them enough, that the Jewish people weren't inspired enough, that the Jewish people felt such a need to complain. So to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was about not, do you have enough meat? Of course Hashem has enough meat. And this we're going to read next week. Moshe is saying something much deeper. He's saying, and this, I think as parents, we know this. Sometimes when children come to complain about something, they're in the mood of complaining, whatever you're going to give them is just not going to be enough. They'll complain about this, and then when you give them this, they'll complain about that, they'll complain about the way, like whatever it may be, if they want something for dinner and they... the way you put it on the plate and you didn't have the ketchup, whatever it may be, they'll find another and another. And Moshe felt that dissatisfaction. He says to God, you have enough meat? You don't have enough meat. Nothing's going to satisfy them because they don't want meat. It's something deeper. They're complaining. They're devastated. They're upset about something. And whatever you're going to give them is not going to make them happy. And this is what Moshe's upset about, and it's bothering him. He wants to know, how do we deal with this? If there is this terrible upset by the people. But we have to do it much, much more properly. In Ritz Hashem, next week we will. Okay, I'm sorry to leave it like really in awe. Much, okay.